He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, about trust, probate, about how do powers of attorney work? You know, if I have power of attorney, can I bend steel in my bare hands, right? Change the course of mighty rivers, stop them. How does it only go? More powerful than a locomotive? Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound? Probably not, but yeah, a fella can dream. Anyway, about powers of attorney, if you're wondering, how does that Medicaid stuff work? Can we really hang on to the house, the cottage? How is that going to affect us? We're looking to buy or sell the family home, develop the lower 40, the upper 20, whatever. Or if you're starting a business, stopping a business, trying to keep that business going, now's the time for you to give us a shout at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. I want to say hello to everybody who showed up for our most recent Holland workshop. Folks in Holland will be pleased to know, I think, hope you'll be pleased to know, that we are going to be opening our office there probably in February. So you don't have to make make that long drive anymore. And if you're listening in Muskegon, we are scouting out some territory over there as well. There is a Muskegon workshop coming up. Love to see you at the Muskegon workshop. Just call us at 888-463-2843. If you hit the number 1 when you call that number, if you call right now, of course, you'll come right through to the station. But if you any other time, if you hit 1, then you can talk to a live person. If you hit number 2, then you can just record whatever you want. recipes, anything like that. That'd be just fine. Or if you'd like to sign up, who knows, sign up for one of the workshops or set an appointment, then, of course, you can do that as well. You can also go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. On the website will be the upcoming workshops. Love to see you there, including the date and time for the Muskegon workshop. You can also email me, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. There you go. I think I've got all the housekeeping taken care of there for the moment. 888-463-2843, 888-GO-DAVID. That's the number for you to call. Now, one of the disturbing trends, we talked about this, have been talking about this for years, this whole, patient protection, hardy, har, har, and affordable, ho, 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 care act. I mean, and one of the things that was pointed out, not by me only, obviously, come on, but it has been pointed out, is that it involved reprogramming hundreds of millions of dollars out of Medicare into Medicaid, into other programs, let's put it that way, into Obamacare, which apparently, since it's a big failure now, you can't call it Obamacare. You got to call it the Affordable Care Act. But that's another story. Anyway, the point is that they've taken money from one program, reprogrammed it into the other. Well, how did that happen? And what are the consequences? One of the consequences of this, and this has always been true, okay, but it's more true now than ever. It's more important that you really be paying attention to this now more than ever, is the fact that if you go into an acute care facility, go into the hospital for something, okay, you have to make sure that you're admitted. Now you say, well, what does that mean, admitted? What do you mean? I went to the hospital. They gave me a bed. Every morning the tray came, right, with the steamy scrambled eggs on it, kind of watery and what have you, okay? How could I not be admitted to the hospital? Well, the answer is, you're in the hospital, and yeah, they are providing services and all the rest of it, but you may not be admitted. Lots of times you'll go in for, quote-unquote, observation, Okay? One of the things, if you or a loved one goes into the hospital, goes into a long-term care facility, an acute care facility, a hospital, you have to insist that you not be in for observation. Okay? Because if you do, you know, if you say, oh, I'm in for observation or what have you, Medicare is not going to pay. Are you with me on this? See, here's the way it works. You go to the acute care facility. You're in the acute care facility for 3 midnights. Okay? So, you know, if you show up at 1 a.m. that day, you spent the whole rest of the day there. It doesn't count. Okay? 3 midnights. And you've got to be admitted for 3 midnights. I'll give you an example. My mom, when she went into the long-term care, she started out at Cape Cod Hospital. Okay? They kept her on a gurney, you know, till like 1 o'clock in the morning. Went in the afternoon, didn't know what to do with her, put her here, put her there, whatever. Fortunately, my older sister, who is a nurse, and a somewhat forceful personality in her own right, knew what the rules were. Okay, otherwise, they'd have spun her. It looked like 3 days, right? But Mary Beth was, no. You know, we didn't get our 3 midnights in. Admitted. Was she in the hospital? Was she under their care? Was she on the records? Yes, yes, yes. But she was not admitted until after midnight of the first day. Are you with me on this? You got to get the paperwork right, because if you don't, Medicare will not pay. Medicare will not pay. And if they don't pay, what happens then? Well, now you pay. And you've got to get the 3 midnights of admission. You know, well, we had you under observation for 2 days, and then we admitted you. Okay? Well, it's got to be 3 midnights after admission. Otherwise, Medicare will not pay for your rehab. And here's why I bring in the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, patient protection, whatever you want to call it, because they're tightening the screws on this, okay? If there was any wiggle room before, there's no wiggle room now. And they're getting very, very serious, very, very technicalities and all the rest. They're getting very stringent on what an admission is, and all the rest of this stuff, okay? You can't be the one they step on, because otherwise you will be the one they... You know, there's an old saying. If you're playing poker, right? You're at a card table and you're playing poker, and you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker, okay? You're the mark. You're the one who's going to get tromped on. And I hate to say it, but it is true that it's the same way when you do this. If you go into the hospital, right, and you're not the one who's sharp and, you know, who has a basic appreciation for what's going on, okay, you're the one who's going to get squished. This just came up this past week. That's why I'm talking about it. We've got a situation where an older person, almost 100 years old, goes into the hospital, right, broken pelvis, the whole nine yards, goes to the rehab. Okay, spends a month in rehab, gets home, and her Christmas present is a bill for almost $30,000. Because why? Well, because she was never admitted. Broken pelvis and not admitted. Okay? And what that meant was, not only is her hospital visit uncovered, not covered, but, and this is just by the Medicare, okay? The hospital visit's not covered, and none of the rehab is covered either. Because she didn't have the 3 days of admission, 3 midnights, in the acute care facility. You know, it drives you crazy. But there it is. Now, do you think this lady can afford $30,000, $28,000 plus to pay for all that? When, hey, I'm in the hospital. I've got the doctors and the nurses. You know, I got one of them funny beds that goes up and down. What do you mean I'm not admitted? Well, you got to know this stuff, okay? Because if your loved one goes in, if your mom or dad goes in, if your spouse goes in, okay, it doesn't help that you were in the bed. It doesn't help that they gave you breakfast. It doesn't help that the doctors came in and saw you. If you're not admitted, you're not admitted. Okay? And if you're not admitted for 3 midnights, then the rehab isn't covered either. And now you're on the hook for it 100%. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. We've got some callers. We'll get to you right after the break. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you'd like to get your question, comment, or concern on the air, it's easy to do. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And Ed from Cutlerville did exactly that. And see how easy that was, Ed? What's up?
Good morning.
Good morning. How can I help?
Pardon me?
How can I help?
I'm a trustee of a trust.
Okay.
The trust has been going on now for about a year. But at any rate, as the trustee, I'm being told that if I administer the trust by the last amendment, the particular party is going to sue me.
Okay.
Which I guess if they want to do that, they can go ahead. But what I want to know is, what do I have to do to get everything that I own, my home and all that, into my wife's name, so in the event that I am sued and I would lose the case, that my wife would not be destitute for the rest of her life?
I don't know that I would do that. I'm not even sure that would work. You see, if you're under a... Here's the thing, Ed. You've got this trust, and you say it's been in effect for a year. Does that mean that the person died a year ago?
Yes, the person died on the 25th of February.
Okay. So, and you took on the... You're on board as the trustee, right?
Right.
And there was an amendment to the trust. Was it a deathbed
amendment to the trust?
Eight amendments.
And there's a contention, there's a difference. Where the question is between the Seventh Amendment and the Eighth Amendment. And I feel that I'm obligated to apply the distributions of the trust and so forth by the Eighth Amendment.
Right.
But one of the parties claims that the deceased was not competent to make that change on the Eighth Amendment. And so I, in effect, am telling him, well, if you think that's the case, then you go get a lawyer and take it to court and prove that he wasn't competent, because he's the only one of the beneficiaries that feels that way.
Right, right. Ed, I would not turn my life upside down for this, okay? You've got it's a written amendment, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and was there an attorney involved?
Yes, there was an attorney involved.
And it's notarized and it's witnessed and all that?
Yes, sir.
Let's get back to it.
All right.
Fundamentally, right, bottom line, fundamentally, in our society, America, United States, is what we call a trust-based society. What that means is we count on one another. We rely on one another. Nation of laws and not men. You know, that it's not a tribal society where it's whatever tribe you belong to, well, your loyalty goes. No, our loyalty is more spread out. It's more, you know, we trust one another. We count on one another, you know, even if they're in California, to do the right thing, right, because we're all under the same set of laws. Now, that's a very good thing, that you can trust somebody else to act in your best interest. And that's what trusts are about, you know, the trust that you've done here. Whoever, is it a parent who died or a friend or what?
That's a brother.
Your brother died. Okay. So
and
it's very...
It's another brother that's contesting it.
I gotcha. So in society, in America, okay, it's a very good thing for your brother to be able to count on you to act for him, okay? That's a trust relationship. Like I say, in many societies throughout the world and history and everything else, they're not trust societies. It works differently. But here, what we've said is, look, I want you, brother, to act in my best interest. Now, that's important, because I want you to use your judgment. I want you to use your brain. I want you to use your heart. I want you to use all those things that I know about you. That's why I picked you, Ed, to act for me, because I know who you are, and I want you to use your judgment, okay? I know who you are. I know your life experience, okay? That's why he picked you. And that's a good thing. That makes our society very efficient, okay? I mean, America is not the wealthiest society in the history of the world by accident, okay? Right. We didn't steal it from somebody. It's because we work well together. We work better together as a nation than any other, any other group of people in the history of the world, okay? That's just a fact of it. And trust law, right, is one of the reasons that people work so well. It's one of the reasons for the wealth of the United States is that your brother can count on you to use your judgment. Now, so what if somebody challenges that? Okay, we got the other brother saying, it's not that. Okay, he wants to complain. Well, society, America, thinks that it's very important for your brother to have confidence that you, Ed, are going to be the one doing this. So we make it difficult for the complainers to complain. Okay? Your judgment about how things should go. You've got a document that wasn't scribbled on the back of the pillow, you know, as or that you were holding his hand as he. No, you got a regular good old amendment there. You even had an attorney involved. You got the notary or witnesses or something, right? You have every reason to believe that this is a legitimate expression of your brother's intent. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Adam is flashing me, though. If we get out of here, hang on through the break, because this is really, really important, I think. The whole system of trust law, you know, why do we do things the way we do? Why does America do things the way it does? Why do we have trusts? Why do we allow this? Philosophically, it's extremely important because what it does is it says to your brother, okay, I can plan ahead. Okay, what I want to have happen with my stuff is what's going to happen with my stuff. What that means is that your brother, your deceased brother, okay, cares about his stuff. He doesn't just leave it out on the prairie and let the winds take it away. Okay,
right.
See, throughout his lifetime, he's like, okay, I have a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen after I die. That increases my interest in doing the right things, in hanging on to my stuff, in not wasting the resources that I've got. I'm going to entrust those to my brother, Ed, and because I'm doing that, okay, those assets are going to be held together, they're going to do what I want to do, it gives your deceased brother the incentive to keep things together. Okay, we're going to go to a break, but when I get back, I'm going to deal exactly with your question, okay? You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
And the way the sunlight plays upon her head.
Welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. We also take your emails, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Email is short for electronic mail. See? And if you have an electronic mail account and you type in david@davidcarrierlaw.com, then we'll get those emails. And we'd love to get the emails, of course. Also, you can go to the website. Here's a big surprise for you. It's called davidcarrierlaw.com. At davidcarrierlaw.com, you can see our upcoming workshops. We have them coming up in the very near future in Holland on the beautiful campus of Hope College. And we also have them on over at over in Muskegon again. So love to see our friends from Muskegon and Holland at those workshops. Save you a long drive in frigid January. How about that? Just give us a call. Sign up on the website. Drop us an email. Send it by carrier pigeon. Hardy har har. You know, send us. We're open to all forms of communication. How about that? Let's get to a couple of the emails. I am being billed here. Here's one. I'm being billed personally by the nursing home in which Dad resided for 2 months. Am I personally responsible to pay this bill? Dad died last January. Here's the thing. You have to be very careful when you check in a loved one into a long-term care facility. You know, you don't ever, ever sign papers without reading them. That's good advice, right? Good advice, cheap advice. Of course we sign papers without reading them. You're not a lawyer. I mean, and they give you a whole big stack of paper. What, you're going to read the whole thing? And what if you did? Would you understand it? No. And so what people do is you rely on what the people who are asking you to sign the papers are telling you. And if they're telling you, we're not moving mom out of the ambu cab, right, until you sign the papers, what are you going to do? The answer is you're going to sign the papers. And that's what people do, as a matter of fact. And they wind up personally, and every once in a while, it doesn't happen that often, but every once in a while, in the stack of papers is a personal guarantee, which you didn't know there was a personal guarantee in there because you didn't read the papers, which, of course, you didn't read the papers because mom's waiting out in the frigid cold in the ambu cab, and you got to unload her, but then they won't let her in until you sign the papers. Okay. Well, obviously, the best bet is to read the paperwork, have your attorney read the paperwork, go through it. You know, we review these contracts all the time, you know, just so people really, really understand what it is they're getting themselves into when they, whether it's a long-term care contract or one of these continuity of care things, you know, or you're buying an interest in a long-term care facility, you know, where you start out with the apartment and it moves you all the way through assisted living to skilled nursing. It's all, oh, don't worry, you know, once you're with us, you know, you've got a place forever and a day and all that. Well, that's all nice. You know, that's all nice sales talk, okay? Wonderful sales talk. But you've got to read the contract. That's all what the whatever salesperson promises you something, right, and then you sign a contract, what the salesperson said is what the courts refer to as puffing. I call it puffing. And you can't rely on it any more than you can rely on a puff of hot air. Okay? It's sales talk. That's what it is. It's not contract talk. Contract talk is what you signed. Okay? So what I'm telling you is it doesn't matter what they say. If you're signing a piece of paper, what matters is the paper. Are you with me on that? You know, worth the paper it's written on. Oh, they didn't write it on paper. Oh, but you did sign this paper. Okay? The fact that you must have misunderstood. Oh, we were just puffing. Okay? That's not going to help you if you signed a personal guarantee. Now, that's how they're going to get you, is because you signed the personal, you know, it's Dad's services, everything else. There's no reason, in the email case, there's no reason for you to be liable for your loved one's long-term care costs unless you agreed to it. And so I didn't agree to it. Well, did you sign a pile of papers? Yeah. Well, is this your signature? Yeah. Okay, this is what we call a personal guarantee, and you just agreed to it. So how do you avoid that? Here's your handy tip of the day. Whenever you have a loved one, and you're going into the long, number one, the best, but what's the best bet? The best bet, of course, is to read the stuff, understand it, know what you're getting into. And if you don't agree with it, don't sign it. Or line it out. Okay? If you're reading a document and it says the undersigned personally guarantees, okay, what do? You take your pen and you draw a line through it. That's what you do, and you initial it. That's what you do. You're not agreeing to that. Okay? But that doesn't happen, does it? No. Because it's cold out, and we need to get mom in the facility. Okay, fine. So what we do instead is whenever you sign a paper like that, right, whenever you're signing somebody in or out or what have you, you always want to do a comma, right? You sign your name, comma, if this is true, POA. Now, what does that mean? It means power of attorney. Now, or you can sign it, comma, AIF, which means attorney in fact, which is really more accurate, but I'm kind of acknowledging I've lost this battle, okay? Everyone always puts comma POA. So put comma POA. or DPOA, if that makes you happy, okay? And what that says is, what you are saying there is, I'm not signing this, I'm not taking this on as my obligation, I'm taking this on as the attorney, in fact, the AIF, or pursuant to a power of attorney or a durable power of attorney, okay? I'm not taking this on as my personal liability. I agree to spend mom's money, you know, mom's money to pay your bills, but I'm not going to pay my own money to pay your bills, to pay mom's bills to the facility. Are you with me on that? So another thing that we do frequently is before you sign something like this, if you can remember to write it in there, okay, no personal liability, or I assume no personal liability, comma, sign it, okay? I assume no personal liability, comma. So you're adding your own term to the contract is what you're doing. Okay, it's, you know, legally it's a counteroffer, blah, blah, blah. But if they sign it, right, if they accept it, now, okay, now they're bound by that, just as you are, okay? So you don't ever just sign your name to these documents. You always sign your name, comma, POA, comma, AIF, attorney in fact, right? And if you can remember to do it, before you sign your name, just write in, I assume no personal liability. If you just put in no personal liability, that'd be better than nothing. Are you with me on this? Okay. You know, they give you these contracts and they give you all these papers and, you know, you got to sign or we won't let you in. Well, you know, the person giving you those papers, they're not a lawyer either. Okay. And if you go through it and you look for those personal guarantee language or personal liability language and you line it out, they're not going to complain about it. And if you write in the, I assume no personal, I've had never had anybody rejected because they wrote in, I assume no personal liability. And on the other side of and if you write something like that in, now we've got something to say. But there are contracts out there where it says, we don't care how you sign it. You know, even if you sign as agent, you're personally liable. Well, how can you do that? You know, how can you, as a matter of contract, how can that be? Well, if you sign your name to it, okay, now you're liable. That's just, it's black and white. But if you write in, I assume no personal liability, now you're modifying the contract and the handwritten controls over the printed, so now you're good to go again. Again, you know, are you with me on that? So very important when you're signing someone in. So if you do that, you may still get the bills may come to you because it may be that as attorney, in fact, as holding the power of attorney for the parent, you know, you're the billing address, okay? It may even have your name on it, right? But don't ever assume that you're personally liable for it. And the way you make sure that you're not personally liable for it, right? Number one, read the contract, you know, have us review it. That's always a good idea. But in any event, before you sign anything like that, remember, comma, POA. Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. You know, we just talking to Ed about, you know, being challenged as trustee, and you know the basic idea here is that we do want people to be able to count on other people. We want you to be able to plan ahead with a high degree of confidence that what you want to have happen is what will happen. Okay? Like, for example, if you called 888-463-2843, 888-463-2843, then you have a high degree of confidence that we'll answer the phone and get your question on the air. And if you go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and say, hey, I'd like to sign up for that Muskegon workshop, or I'd like to sign up for that, you know, hometown Grand Rapids workshop or the one in Holland or whatever else, according to the website, and you send us a, you have a high degree of confidence that there will be a name tag waiting for you when you show up, as well as hopefully raising cookies. Very high degree of confidence in that. Okay, well, we'd like you to have the same degree of confidence in planning your estate, planning ahead. And the way we do that is by not only permitting, but protecting people in their decisions about who it is that's going to be making decisions for them if they're not competent. By allowing you, by respecting your choices, okay? By recognizing that because you did things a certain way, I have savings. Not because they fell out of the sky, not because I stole them from somebody, but because I busted my hump, I did all the right things. That's how I got my life savings. I understand. Okay? We're going to let you, we're going to protect your inalienable right to decide who gets that stuff. Do you see? And one of the aspects of that protection is that when you choose somebody to make decisions for you, we're going to back that person up pretty far. Pretty far. But if it turns out that, right, they're stealing, we're going to come down on them like a ton of bricks. Now, when someone challenges, okay, that's the stealing trustee part. But what if you're saying, well, you're not competent. The person was not competent to make the amendment, to make the will, to make the trust, the power of attorney, whatever it is. There's two aspects of that. The first is what we call mental capacity. As I mentioned before, very difficult to prove a lack of mental capacity. If you've got witnesses and a notary signing off on the thing, it's pretty much over and out. Okay? That's number one. The second is what we call undue influence. Now, undue influence is the where all the litigation happens. Okay? With mental capacity, I don't want to say it's cut and dried exactly, but it's a heck of a lot more cut and dried than undue influence. And with undue influence, that's where you say, well, you exerted such control over the person, over the brother, that you overbore his will. Okay? He wasn't able to make those decisions. And the court case is kind of interesting because it's pretty tough to show a lack of undue influence. Excuse me. It's pretty tough to show undue influence. All right? Falling on your knees and crying is not undue influence. Pleading and begging, okay? I'll never talk to you again, right? In general, is not enough to show it, okay? Your typical Oxygen channel TV drama, whatever, from what I understand of that channel, is not enough, to show undue influence. However, okay, and the burden of proof is on the person making the claim, making the charge, okay? So if you're going to say that somebody else undue influenced somebody else, right? So if a brother is going to challenge that, say, well, you undue influenced them, well, you got a very high burden of proof to show that unless the person who was benefited by the change, okay? So let's say we've got a situation where one brother disinherits the other brother, okay, or gives it to charity or something like this, then there's no benefit that goes to the person who you're pointing the finger at. Okay, if there's no benefit, it's very difficult to show that undue influence. However, when there is a benefit that goes to the person that you're pointing the finger at, and that person occupies a special relationship, if it's the attorney, if it's the fiduciary, if it's the person with power of attorney, if it's, they have to be in that position of trust. This is what I'm talking about, where we want people to trust other people. But if you're the trusted one, if you're the one who is being given the authority, who's being given the trust, okay, that person is counting on you to use your independence. Well, if you subvert that, now it's up to you to prove that there was no undue influence, that you did not unduly influence this decision. Are you with me on that? And usually whoever has the burden of proof in these cases loses. So if you want to show undue influence, now, mom's at home and the only child who's ever has access to mom, who cut off mom's access to everybody else, right, and it's only the one person who's been taking care of mom and has mom's power of attorney and trustee and all the rest of this, has complete control over mom's life. And then all of a sudden, right, mom says, okay, I'm cutting everybody else out, and the one kid gets everything. Well, now it's up to that person to prove that mom was not unduly influenced. Are you with me on that? The burden of proof shifts. At the start, it's up to you to prove that the person acted badly, unless that person has complete control, you know, occupies a special relationship, right? Has special faith and confidence and all the rest of this. Now it's up to them to prove that they didn't use that special position, right, to unduly influence mom. See, so it shifts. It's not that it's impossible to do, but it is tough. But once you start making that case, right, once you've made that case, well, now the burden shifts to you to prove that you didn't do it. Good luck for that. Okay? So that's, you know, again, you know, just to say, we very strongly protect the people who've been given that confidence, because we want people to rely on other people. Let's see if we can't quickly get to one last email. Only got a couple minutes here. I'm being billed personally by the nursing home in which Dad resided. Am I personally responsible to pay the bill? The answer is, did you sign a piece of paper saying you were personally responsible to pay the bill? If you did, yes, you probably are. If you didn't, well, definitely you're not. That's how that goes. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, saying thank you for everyone who showed up at our recent Holland workshop. Love to see you down there. And we'll be back before you know it, opening an office in Holland probably in the next month or two. I'm scouting out some locations down there just so you don't have to make the drive anymore. How about that? And, of course, if you go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, you can sign up for the Muskegon workshop, which is coming up, or any of the other weekly workshops, the two weekly workshops that we're doing right here in good old GR. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.